The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome. It's good to be here with you today. Thanks for joining me. Always fun to listen to Father Thiemann. Such a good guy. And we've got a lot to get into this afternoon. I hope you'll be able to stay with me. Just a quick look ahead. You don't want to miss this. After the chaplet, I just saw a story that I think deserves some attention. And if you've been following international news at all, you know what's happening in India. There is a COVID strain in India that's taking a lot of lives. It has just been declared a global concern. Data is showing it is vaccine resistant. So we'll look at that with an infectious disease doctor coming up a little bit later. How effective is your vaccine? And of course, you know, what kind of strains are we seeing? And answer a lot of your COVID questions. There's a company called Novavax that is combining a flu and COVID-19 vaccine that's showing a lot of promise. I think that's a moral vaccine too. So I'll let you know about that. So we got a lot to talk about coming up a little bit later, and there's so much more. Right now, though, we'll just bring you up to speed on some of the news that's happening in Russia. There was a 19-year-old that has been arrested for shooting and killing 7 children and 2 adults at a school in the city of Kazan. It's about 500 miles east of Moscow. And when I saw that story, I thought, you know, we hear so much in our own country, don't we, of all these shootings, school shootings, the violence. It does happen in other parts of the world. And my heart goes out to all of those who have lost loved ones there. 2 of those children died after they jumped out of a second-story window to avoid the shooters. Some 21 other children were injured, but the president, Vladimir Putin, of course, said that he would undertake a review of the country's gun control laws after the incident. Now, what that means, I'm not sure. We'll see what he'll do regarding whether or not citizens can have their guns. Here in the States, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, under the leadership of the HHS, under Secretary Xavier Becerra, well, they're looking, and this is something I really want to call you to pray for, they're looking at lifting all restrictions on the abortion pill. I just don't know how much further down this slippery slope we can go. I mean, our nation, and again, I've got great hope for the future. I know God is merciful, and that's what gives me hope. That's what gives me peace. That's what allows me to sleep at night. That's what allows me to have confidence that my children will have a brighter future. But when this pro-death administration, and that's what it is, I'm just so frustrated by it, is looking at lifting the restrictions on the abortion pill. You know the side effects from that? You know the problem that comes with that? They want to lift all restrictions on it. What is it about killing a child in the womb that is so sacred to this administration and to this country? What is it? It's rooted in the demonic, plain and simple. This is my own theory on it. I really believe it is. As Sister Lucia talked about, the final confrontation would be over family, over marriage, right? Satan hates the family. Therefore, he hates life. He hates it. He dances with joy as he sees this type of stuff happening. You know, there is a pill called, I think it's Mifeprex. There's also Mifepristone, I think. I forget the name of the other one. I'm trying to pull it up from memory. It's dispensed in clinics and medical offices and hospitals or you know, under the supervision of a certified healthcare provider. But now it can be delivered by the mail. Can you imagine that? Your 16-year-old daughter, your 15-year-old daughter, you know, who knows? Rather than have to be given in person, a lot of times these girls that get pregnant like that, if it's not by their boyfriend, it could be, you know, abuse, it could be rape, it could be incest. I mean, I think it's important that these girls who are pregnant understand, they speak to an adult, they have some sort of supervision, medical supervision. You're not ordering via the mail a pill that could have unforetold ramifications. The FDA wants it to be, you know, prescribed by regular doctors and physicians, assistants and nurse practitioners, and to be allowed to be picked up at pharmacies. But that would, of course, greatly expand the number of people who would be able to get it, to get what is really a very dangerous drug, not just to the unborn, but it's to the woman themselves. Get it in the mail. Patrick, you're right. How do you say the other pill?
Like I learned to sound confident, Mifepristone or Mifepristone.
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to remember that. Thank you for following up on that. Anyway, let's pray for that. You know, again, I it frustrates me. It really does. It frustrates me to see where we're heading. And, you know, you wonder. You'll wonder what's going on in our country today. I think we need to pray. We need to fast. We need to really do our part to live our faith, to bring about conversion, to be educated on what the truths of our faith are, to defend life, to put men and women into office that respect the dignity of the human person, to have those competent writers in Hollywood, you know, those representatives, you know, those physicians. We need to change the culture by infiltrating the culture. How do you do that? You instill these values in your kids so the next generation. See, this culture of death understands this. That's why they're going after your kids. That's why they're attacking the schools. That's why they're infiltrating it with this, you know, gender identity confusion that's going on. That's why they're promoting this culture of death. They're promoting abortion and contraception. You know, that's why we are seeing so much take place and so much of the targeting of our kids. It's honestly, it's satanic. That's my personal opinion on it. You may disagree with me. That's what I see. That therefore, you know, we as parents have primary roles in educating our kids. We need to educate them. You know, but you need to know your faith. You need to live your faith, and you need to sustain your faith with that prayer. And look, I'm not giving up hope. I might be frustrated. In the end, good always conquers evil. Never forget that. Okay, in the end, good will conquer evil. You might have to suffer if you go down the wrong path a little bit. You eat the bad fruit. You may have to get a little sick. I think we're beginning to see that. But in the end, I think we'll learn. And in the end, I think good, of course, will triumph. Attorneys general for 44 states and territories, they've written to Facebook telling Mark Zuckerberg, guess what? Mark, scrap your plans, you know, to make a new Instagram site for kids. Did you hear about this? You're talking about how, you know, kids are often targeted. Zuckerberg wants to make this site for kids under the age of 13, okay? But the state AGs, they're pushing back saying, look, he's only trying to create a market, right? I mean, doesn't this make sense to you? It goes back to my previous point. Let's cultivate the next generation of Facebook users, Instagram users. Let's get them even younger. Let's get them even younger. So not responding to any real market need, but they're just saying, how can we grow our base? That's their goal. How do we expand? How do we grow? Let's target kids. That's it. So according to TechCrunch.com, where I saw that, the AGs call for Facebook to abandon their plan, citing concerns around developmental health, privacy, and Facebook's track record of prioritizing over the well-being of children on its platforms. And on that point, let me just say, bravo. Right? You're right. You called them out for what they are. They delve into, you know, some of these worries that for these kids who really are quite immature at the time. There's cyberbullying that goes on. There's online grooming by sexual predators. That's a real thing, right? So you're going to create this platform that makes these kids even more vulnerable. There's algorithm. You know, they have the with Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, anything, and social media, they have algorithms that show specific ads, like, say, dieting ads to users with eating disorders. So I hope Zuckerberg takes their advice. I hope he dials back on this one. And again, you're the parent. You know, we can yell at Zuckerberg and everyone else, but you got to know what your kids are doing. You have to be a good guardian of them. Did you hear what happened with the Golden Globes? When those things were done, everybody was crying about how boring they were, how bad, how political, right? Well, NBC's been airing the Golden Globe Awards for years now. But the executives there, I saw this morning, they've decided they're not going to do it next year. They are not going to air the Golden Globes. It's been canceled by NBC. And not just because of low ratings. That's what I thought it was. Ratings were in the tank. So I had to dive into the article. What's the reason? Well, listen to this. Reuters will explain.
NBC announced on Monday that it will not broadcast the 2022 Golden Globe ceremony after complaints about ethical lapses and lack of diversity among the Hollywood foreign press, the group that hands out the annual awards for film and television. Despite plans last week to reform the HFPA to recruit more black members, among other changes over the next 18 months, NBC released a statement Monday that the reforms were not quick enough, saying, quote, "Change of this magnitude takes time and work, and we feel strongly that the HFPA needs time to do it right. As such, NBC will not air the 2022 Golden Globes." The move follows an investigation published in February by the Los Angeles Times that noted that there were no black journalists currently in the HFPA. The newspaper also raised long-standing ethical questions over the close relationship between the HFPA and movie studios that may influence the choice of Golden Globe nominees and winners. Tom Cruise joined a revolt led by streaming platforms and studios, returning the three Golden Globe statuettes he won for his roles in Jerry Maguire, Magnolia, and Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah, so Cruise returns his three Golden Globe trophies to join this protest. I think the Golden Globes are kind of boring. I think they're kind of political. And, I'm offending anyone by that, but I'm glad. And Cruise can return as many Golden Globes as he wants. The problem is, as they're saying, the judges aren't as diverse enough. Okay. Apparently, there's not a single black person on the 87-person panel. I think that's a problem. I do. I'm not discounting that at all. I think you should diversify. I think that's great. The panel, critics say, is simply too small. And according to the Wall Street Journal, Hollywood Foreign Press Association, which run the Golden Globes, they've been criticized for accepting paid trips and other perks from studios and cozying up to the big stars in return for access. But, diversify it. Add a few more or expand the panel. That's a simple solution. But they are boring. I'm sorry. I found them to be boring, and I can't stand when these celebrities get up and they pontificate. They use their platform to espouse their political agenda. 87 voters, Patrick was telling me. 87-person panel, that's it. Why not double, triple the size? Make it bigger. This past April, it marked the, 2,774th birthday of the city of Rome. I saw that number. Rome's an ancient city, right? The legend goes that there were two twins. One was named Romulus and the other Remus. And they were suckled by a she-wolf when they were young. And when they got older, they decided to build a city where Rome currently is. But they had an argument, and Romulus killed Remus. And the city was named after Romulus. And that's, of course, a legend. The fact is that people have been living in that region for, at least 3,000 years? And now there's evidence of others who lived in the area long before that. I love when archaeology gives up its secrets. And I saw a story which I wanted to share with you. Unbelievable. Archaeologists have uncovered a cave near Rome. Okay, guess what they found in it? You're not going to believe it. Neanderthals. They found Neanderthals in it. According to the Epoch Times, 8 of the remains are dated to 50,000 to 68,000 years ago. So we're not talking 2,774, even 3,000. We're talking 68,000 years ago. You know, the oldest is dated, some say, the finds, almost as 90 to 100,000 years ago. So you're going from 50 to 100,000 years if you look at that spectrum. These findings apparently made it the most significant place in the world for Neanderthal remains. So Rome, beautiful place. If you've never gotten to that part of our planet, take a trip. You will be glad you did. You will love it. You will love it. I want to also share a little bit with you. And of course, you can join me anytime here at 888-914-9149 and get in on the conversation. And I want you to pray for Chelsea Clinton, right? We talked a little bit yesterday about the German bishops, right? And what's happening there with the blessing, the so-called blessing of gay unions, et cetera. There is another question that was raised over the weekend. There was a leading Democrat, Chelsea Clinton, gave a talk for a virtual conference held at the Vatican. It was called Exploring the Mind and Body and Soul, How Innovation and Novel Delivery Synthesis. One more try. I'll give you her title again. Exploring the Mind, Body, and Soul, How Innovation and Novel Delivery Systems Improve Human Health. That's a long title, isn't it, for a talk? Keep it simple, right? That's kind of long. What expertise she has in health delivery systems, that's what struck me. I mean, why is she talking about this? So she took time to tell the conference that, I personally strongly believe that there has to be, more intensive and international coordinated global regulation of the content on social media platforms. So she wants to regulate the internet. They want to have social media platforms regulated. She claims that one of the most popular videos in South America right now is what she called an anti-science screed that YouTube has just refused to take down. And she's apparently asking leadership of various companies to take those kind of videos down, but they refuse. So her conclusion is, we need regulation, right? We need regulation. Of course, what this vocal support of abortion was doing, speaking of the Vatican conference this year, I don't know. But again, let's pray for so much of the confusion that we are now seeing in the culture. And let's pray for the Clintons. I often say that we need to pray for our political leaders. Speaking of being overseas, Jerusalem, I'm sure you probably haven't missed it today. If you turned on the news, you will have seen unbelievable violence. And you know, we take the peace that we have here in our own nation, I think, sometimes for granted. We live in a polarized country, that's for sure. But you know, there aren't rockets flying from Canada or from Mexico or from one state to another. There has been a lot of violence recently in the city of Jerusalem over the last few weeks. It became a lot worse yesterday on what's known as Jerusalem Day. Now, Jerusalem Day celebrates a day in which the state of Israel, they took control of the city back in the 1967 war, known as the Six-Day War. And from what the secular press is reporting, the tension started when the prime minister there, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he started talks to evict Palestinians from a certain area of the holy city to make room for Jews that wanted to live there. And that has allegedly just sparked unrest among Palestinians. It's culminated yesterday, and there were clashes between Palestinians throwing rocks and other objects at Israeli police in the area of the Temple Mount and near the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And it's considered to be, of course, by Muslims, their third holiest mosque. And it got worse. It got worse when Hamas started launching rockets. They began to fire rockets into Israel from the Gaza Strip into Jerusalem, even. So the Israeli response, as you can expect, it was fierce. They had retaliatory strikes. Hundreds of people have been injured, and a few Palestinian leaders have been killed. And there's also claims that some children were killed in those airstrikes, too. So with this type of violence, always, always comes tragedy. According to the BBC, there's been unrest in the northern city of Haifa and in the West Bank city, as well as of Ramallah. So continue to keep them in your prayers. For an update on what's going on, Fox will give you a little summary of the tension now escalating between Israel and Palestine.
Two major issues, one having to do with a very specific neighborhood in Jerusalem, another one having to do with the holy month of Ramadan. Tomorrow is Eid, the last day of Ramadan, the holiest month in Islam. And Muslims, Palestinians in Jerusalem were clashing with police this week at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the third holiest site in Islam, and that has led to a lot of the tension. All of these things happening together, along with political issues for both the Israelis and the Palestinians, it's all coming to a focal point right now, leading to a massive conflict that started out, as we said, with just demonstrations and clashes, and now the region is on the brink of war.
Yeah, so pray. We're in unsettled times, is a good way to put it. And it brings me back to where we are. I mean, Our Lady, and she's come in many places. Of course, we'll be celebrating the anniversary of the great feast of Fatima a little bit later in the week on May 13th. Third secret, the anniversary of that is going to be coming up too. She gave secrets here to the seers. She saw what was looming in the world's future. You know, she came in 1917 in Fatima, Portugal, to a group of young kids. And they were shepherds, and she warned of the rise of atheistic communism. She said that the Holy Father would have much to suffer. She talked of the potential for war. Now, this did not have to take place. When she appeared, you know, we know the Bolshevik Revolution had taken place. There was unrest there. World War One was raging. And, of course, whoever thought a second great war would take place? But the Virgin did. She knew. And she warned the faithful to pray the rosary, to do penance. And the children did that. They did harsh penances. They were given glimpses of heaven and hell. And nobody in their right mind would ever think that the 20th century, what was about to unfold, would end up becoming one of the darkest centuries in human history. With the horrors we saw in that century, the loss of life, unbelievable. But you got to look at the parallel here. In our own country, we saw the same thing. The Virgin Mary came in a place called Champion, Wisconsin. This is back in 1859. right after the apparitions in Lourdes, France, right? And she came here. She warned of a chastisement that would befall this country because of the sin and the rejection of God. We saw the same thing in La Salette in 1846, right? You go through all of these different areas, and you're going to go ahead and you're going to see the warning of Our Lady. So I don't think our times are any different. We're experiencing an unprecedented series of visitations from the Mother of God today in every habitable continent. And what's the message? It's the same as the one in Fatima and in Champion and in La Salette. It's to pray. It's to amend our lives. I know that sounds trite, and I feel like I say it all the time, but I really do mean it. I believe so much in the transforming power of prayer. Prayer disengages. You know, prayer has a way of moving the heart of God. Prayer is a way of bringing peace. Prayer is a way of bridging the divide. And I think we need to engage in it. Now, look, I'm just as guilty. I got to take the plank out of my own eye. I ebb and flow with my prayer life. Sometimes my prayer life is so deep and so rich. Other times, it's kind of a battle. You know, there's dry times. It's hard to pray. I think we need to pray more. You know, we need to do that. And I'm going to ask you to pray the rosary. Father Rocky prays the rosary every evening at 7 o'clock. Join him for that. Get the family together. Pray the rosary with him. Join me in about a half an hour when we pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Both of these prayers have such unbelievable promises attached to them. Unbelievable. You know, and they both move the heart of God, and they both promise peace. You know, Lord told St. Faustina, the world will have no peace until it turns with trust to my mercy. And until we do that, we're going to see Hamas, we're going to see, you know, division between Palestine and Israel. We're going to see conflict in our own country. We're going to see, you know, Becerra trying to lift restrictions on abortion pills. We're going to all the things that I just talked to you about. We're going to see the chaos that ensues. We're going to see the evil one, as rampant as he is, because he hates, as I've said, family and marriage. He hates life, which is a byproduct of all that, right? So what binds him? What's the chain that ultimately binds the evil one? It's the rosary. It's the chaplet. It's these powerful prayers. So just as I look at the news sometimes, I think spiritually, what should our response be? And there's a lot of ways we can respond. That's just food for thought. Hey, let me take a short break. When we come back, you know I love space, right? I'm a little bit of a nerd that way. I saw a story that I think you'll appreciate. It deals with science offering a common Easter date between the East and the West. You know that the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church celebrate different days for Easter. Why is that? And you know the Holy Fire takes place in the Orthodox Church on Holy Saturday. Do they have the date right? Well, we'll be joined by an astronomer when we come back. We'll take a look at an astronomical truth. Stay with me.
Get caught up on this conversation and all the others by going to the relevant radio archives. Just search for The Drew Mariani Show.
Hey, thanks for joining me. It is good to be with you this afternoon. A lot to talk about. You know, this past Sunday was the sixth Sunday of Easter on the Roman Catholic calendar, and in 2 days we'll be celebrating Ascension Thursday. And if you live in the provinces of Boston or Harvard or Newark or Omaha and Philadelphia, otherwise you've got to wait for, you know, until this coming Sunday for that celebration, but that's a different story. Most of our brothers and sisters in the Orthodox Church, they just celebrated their Easter, if you will, May 2nd. And you heard my previous conversation with Father Richard Simon about the annual Holy Fire that's observed. It takes place in the holiest site in Christendom. It takes place in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem on the eve of the Orthodox Easter. And if you missed that conversation, it's well worth going back to. It's a strange phenomena. The patriarch goes into the site where Christ's body was laid, and a bluish flame begins to emanate out of nowhere, right from the place where the body was. And this lights the candle that he has in his hand, and it soon lights up the entire place. People come with their candles, and this fire spreads like wildfire, if you will. And this happens on the Orthodox Easter Saturday, or Holy Saturday, but right before Easter. And I was always curious about that. Why? Did they get the date right? You know? If you want to listen to that conversation, Father Simon was on with me. He's a great guest. It's our 1 from April 30th. We looked at it back then. So I was watching that, and again, April 30th, hour 1, you can check it. So, you know, it's a five-week difference from when we in the West celebrated the Lord's resurrection and when Easter celebrates it. And it might seem strange, but believe it or not, it all has to do with calendars. And I saw a story, and I thought, well, let's talk about this. I want to revisit this. I'm personally fascinated by it. The Catholic Church, of course, we use the Gregorian calendar to figure out when Easter is going to be, but most of the Orthodox, they use the Julian calendar. And it's only been on rare occasions that our two calendars have overlapped. And it's previous, you know, if you look back, it's obvious to me that if we're worshiping the same Lord, right, Christ only rose from the dead once, not twice. So who's got the date right? Huh? Who has the date right? Fortunately, it appears as if though there were some serious moves towards celebrating a common date for Easter, and it also to do with astronomical calculations. So when it comes to the movement of the stars, I thought of none other than Father Christopher Corbelly. He's a Jesuit priest who is a research astronomer for the Vatican Observatory. And I said, hey, why don't you stop by and explain this to all of us? I'd love to get his take on it. And it's great to have him with us. He previously served as vice director of the Vatican Observatory Research Group, and he's here with us today. Father, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk to you about the stars, whether we're talking about the Star of Bethlehem or some other astronomical anomaly. This is something that has always perplexed me, and part of the reason it perplexed me is because of this weird phenomena that happens in the Orthodox Church on their Holy Saturday. And I'm thinking, but let's start in the beginning. Let's go back. Let's start with the two calendar systems. There's some people who probably don't even know if there were two calendar systems. We, of course, know about our Gregorian calendar. What's the Julian? Explain that to those who may not know.
Well, the Julian calendar was, the name Julian goes back to Julius Caesar, so the year BC 46. So, you know, a long time ago, Julius Caesar established the Julian calendar. So what was needed to calculate was the length of our year in days. And for the Julius Caesar, for his calendar, it was 365 and a quarter, exact. So, which is wonderful. And then, you know, quarter day, well, what you do with that? Well, every 4 years you add a leap year, and that sort of gets, you know, resets it back so that our calendar is then in tune with our Earth going around the sun. So that's the important thing, because that's our real year, isn't it? You know, each time our Earth gets back to the kind of the same place around the sun. And that's measured by what's called the equinox. When we have, just imagine the light hitting our Earth from the sun, and there's an equal amount of light on the north and the southern hemisphere. So the sun is directly over our equator. Now, because the Earth is kind of, tilted in its way around the sun, that changes, and you know, as we go around month by month, and then again in September time, so the fall equinox, then again there's equal amount of light north and south, but then we know at least in the northern hemisphere our light's getting shorter and shorter in the daytime, and as we go into winter. So this is that equinox happens twice a year. It's the spring equinox, when, as it were, the sun crosses from the south, you know, right over the equator, and then moving its way to the north. That's the key, you know, Earth, Sun, date to have in mind. Yeah.
So how's the date of Easter actually celebrated? How was it established, say?
So it was established in relation to that equinox, you know, the spring equinox, and, you know, the first full moon after it. That's, going, you know, the Sunday after the first full moon is going to be Easter. So, and actually that was established by the Council of Nicaea, so, Christian Council in the year 325. Right. And so they went by the science then, and because beforehand there was, you know, kind of, it was going, obviously needs to be linked with Passover, and that's the Jewish calendar, which is based on the moon. But, you know, when exactly was that sort of month, the month of Nisan, as the right. Jewish calendar has it, at the 14th day, which was, and that's the Passover. So that was getting a little bit, not clear in the 4th century. So, Nicaea established it basically based on astronomy, which is wonderful.
So the Orthodox follow the Julian calendar for the date for Easter.
Well, we followed obviously. The Roman Church followed the Julian calendar until it became clear that the Julian calendar was getting out of step with the actual season.
So, do the Orthodox follow the Gregorian calendar? They do, right, in their day-to-day living, but something different for the faith.
Yeah, but they follow the Julian calendar in what we might call the liturgical.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So who do you think has it right? What's your take? Who's got the date of Easter right?
In a sense, both do, but which calendar is right? Which calendar follows, the true motion of our Earth around the sun? And the answer is the Gregorian, and it will do for another, several thousand years. It's a wonderful, a very tiny, tiny adjustment.
Yeah.
So rather than, 365 and a quarter, it's 365 and just a tiny bit less than a quarter.
Yeah.
And hence,
Father,
adjustment made in leap years.
Is there an impetus now for reaching a common date, and we're going to see something along those lines?
Yes, of course. We've been seen for a long time as, needing, a real, an awkward point, as you introduced it. There's the common witness we have to have to the resurrection, along, with our Orthodox brethren and sisters, and as well as with the Roman. We need a common witness to this wonder of the resurrection.
So do you think it would be a fixed date, or would it be a floating date as it is now? Would it be dependent on the cycles of the moon in relationship to the Passover? How do you see that working?
Yeah, you've exactly hit on what it should be, and so people have been talking about a fixed date, whatever it might be, the first Sunday in April, and or the rest of it, or the second, or something, sort of fixed date of it. But I love going back to the Council of Nicaea and saying yes, it's the Sunday after the first moon, after the equinox, but establishing the equinox by an arbitrary date, which we Roman Catholics have, and our arbitrary date for the equinox is March the 21st. It's not quite. It varies a little bit. Let's establish it by the astronomy, and I think that's something that maybe the Orthodox would be happy with as well. So let's go back to the astronomy.
I love it. Hey,
nice year.
Father, are you familiar with the holy fire phenomenon at all? Have you ever heard of that?
I'm not. I was hearing a little bit just as the beginning, and the fire, of course, is the celebration of light, and Easter is all about the light of Christ.
It certainly is. Magnificent. You got to check it out. There's actually a video of this as well. And, again, Holy Saturday, the Orthodox calendar, the Holy Father in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre takes place. And it's an amazing phenomenon. It's been recorded at that church for years now, for centuries. So it goes back a long time. There's video of it happening, and you can catch up with more. But, Father, thank you for being here. It's always good to talk with you. And I appreciate your time and, of course, your expertise.
Well, and thank you for asking me. As you say, it's a little bit confusing, but, being an astronomer, let's go back to the astronomy date for the equinox and then sort of work it out,
I'm with you. I love that. I love it. All right, Padre, have a great one, okay? Thanks for being here.
And you, Drew, and all your listeners.
Thank you.
Well. Okay.
That's Father Chris Corbelli. Say a prayer for him. I love that guy. He's one of my favorites. Joins us quite frequently throughout the year as we see these astronomical events unfold. Just one final note on the Holy Father. If you are not familiar with what happens, let me just give you a thumbnail. On Holy Saturday in the Edicule, that's this newly renovated area of the Holy Sepulchre where Christ was. And when scientists and researchers went in there, their equipment got all bizarre, went kind of crazy. They smelled this beautiful, perfume. There was a lot of phenomena that was associated with the restoration of this particular, the tomb, basically. And what ends up happening is the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem, he enters this chamber where Jesus is located. It's dark. A lot of people outside, as I was saying. And he brings with him, I think he brings 33 candles to be exact. And then he'll say certain prayers. He says them in Armenian, and the Coptic Orthodox, the Coptic patriarchs wait outside the tomb. And from the place where Jesus' body was, they say an unearthly light emanates. It comes out of nowhere. And it then turns into a flame. It turns into fire. And it lights the candles that he carries. Now, I know that sounds hard to believe. You're saying, oh, come on. Does he have a lighter on him? That can't be the case, right? He brings these candles out, and those gathered there share the light, much like the Catholics do on the Easter Vigil. And it's called the Miracle of the Holy Father. It's been going on every year now for centuries on end. There are some aspects of it that make you'll wonder, and it is a fascinating phenomenon. But, you know, why is that so hard to believe? I sit back here sometimes, and I think, you know, I've seen food multiply. You know, I was there when I delivered food to the starving and the homeless, and I was warned ahead of time. They said, look, sometimes we have this phenomena, and I only heard about it in Scripture, right? But the bag of cabbage that I stood in front of never emptied. I've spoken to priests who have encountered the same thing, doing missionary work. We've seen this over and over again. God is a God of providence. He's a multiplier. And he can certainly do that, right? I've seen healing. We've seen cancer disappear, right? I mean, doctors have a PET scan. It's lit up. Next thing you know, it's gone. You know, they call it a miracle. How do you explain that, right? Why is it any different than food multiplying? Why is it any different than, you know, somebody who has, you know, lost a leg having it miraculously regenerate? I know you find those things inconceivable, but they're real. They do happen. God is in control of all the laws of nature. He's above them. He can suspend them. He can heal. He can multiply. He can do whatever. So why not with the holy fire? It's ancient. It's a controversial tradition. It was first written about in the 4th century by, I think Eusebius related that in the year 162, church wardens preparing to celebrate the resurrection of Christ discovered that there was no more oil in which they could fill their lamps. And supposedly, one of the bishops there of Jerusalem ordered the lamps to be filled with water and then ignited, and the lamps became alive with flame. And the Orthodox tradition holds that holy fire happens annually on the day preceding their Orthodox Easter, in which that blue light I described rises from this marble slab. It's a stone slab, if you've ever been there, and eventually forms a column containing a form of fire. All these candles are lit, and the fire is said to spontaneously light other lamps and candles all around the church. Now, there is video of this. I don't have it in front of me here, but I remember seeing it before. And if you do a search, you'll probably find the phenomena as well. So it's out there. But look, that's just I want to leave you on that thought, because with God, all things are possible. And I know that sometimes it's really hard to get our head around. I mean, sometimes we don't understand certain things. Doesn't mean there's not a logical explanation for them. But God can also use the natural in a supernatural way to communicate to his people. But then God also sometimes just lifts those laws, right? And I think that's the case a lot of times. I think heaven sometimes permits this for you and for me so that our weak faith can be fortified, so that when we do face a crisis, we can move forward with great confidence, you know, great belief, great trust, great knowing that God really can do anything. It's about 15 minutes before the top of the hour. We're going to pray the chaplet in about 15 minutes. Why don't you call one other person today and invite them to join us, especially if they're going through a difficult time or they need that miracle in their life, okay? And we'll storm heaven. We'll ask God for his mercy coming up in about 15 minutes. But stay with me. I'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. A look at life you won't find anywhere else.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
God bless you for all the work.
This is the Drew Mariani Show.
God bless you for all the work.
Listen in to the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
The prayers that you have generated through the calls. for the last number of years I've listened.
Every afternoon at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific
on Relevant,
Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. Let's pray. We'll do that coming up in about 10 minutes. Before we talk anymore, I just want to share. I want to say thank you again. I mentioned this, I think, yesterday to you. I think it's really important to say thanks again. Last week we had our pledge drive, and I got an update for you. Yesterday I said we were about $50,000 away from $3 million. Well, I got an update early this morning from the network. We have just crossed the $3 million mark in our pledge drive, and you know that is that's such a testament to your generosity, to your love, and to your mercy. It really is. And this has been one of the biggest hours in the pledge drive. Every single pledge drive really has just been phenomenal. And people value, I think, Relevant Radio, but I think they also value the importance of prayer. $3 million is a lot. I know it sounds like a lot of money. That helps keep us going into the months ahead. Our goal was 2.7, so that extra money is really a tremendous, tremendous blessing. I want to thank you for doing that. Your donation is tax deductible. If you missed it last week, you can always give. It's not too late to give. You can always do that online or the mobile app, or you could always call 877-291-0123. There's lots of ways to get on board. But I just want to say thanks, let you know where we are, because you were part of what was just another spectacular, spectacular drive. It's always fun when I see the calls come in and how generous you actually are. And Patrick, you were part of that. You saw how wild those pledge drives are. I mean, you're on the phones too, taking calls and doing your part. And people are generous. I know you were sharing with me a story of generosity too. I love when people set up GoFundMe pages to help people in need. And you had kind of a cool story, didn't you?
Yeah, Drew. Well, I'm going to let CBS New York here play. But basically, let's just say that you had a kid who ordered a lot of things that you don't really need. So, or maybe one of them, but they could listen from CBS New York.
Some generous donors have helped a Brooklyn mom out of a jam after her four-year-old son ordered more than $2,600 worth of popsicles on Amazon. Noah managed to order 51 cases of SpongeBob SquarePants popsicles. Amazon won't take them back, and Noah's mom, a social work student at NYU and mother of three, couldn't afford to pay for them. So far, more than $4,200 has been donated to a GoFundMe site. Noah's mom says any extra cash will help pay for his education.
And since that story was done, Drew, they've raised over $23,000.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I heard that story a couple days ago. That was out. I mean, first of all, most of those cases, they just forgive that. You know, if you order it from Amazon directly, it'd be like, hey, my kid ordered $3,000 worth of whatever, you know, the Legos or whatever it is. You know, and they'll say no problem. I was surprised that they wanted that mother to pay.
Yeah.
But I guess the product gets destroyed. I guess you can't return it. No. You know, I think probably melts. I mean, you don't have enough storage in your home to freeze that many.
They were probably thinking it was like for like an ice cream truck or something.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure they probably did.
Yeah.
So $20,000 came in. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's definitely making lemons out of making lemonade out of lemons. You know.
I think people are generous. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are just fundamentally good. I really do. I think they are just generous. I love that story, Patrick. Thanks. 9 minutes now before the top of the hour. And as I said, we'll go ahead and pray. You know, I know you might be going through a difficult time, and I like stories like that because that mother was probably sweating bullets when she heard it. It's like, what am I going to do? We can't afford $20,000. I have a colleague here that I'm working with right now, and he says one of his issues is trust. And he actually called a friend and asked him to keep him accountable to prayer, because he knows that if he prays, the level of his trust in God will increase, because you don't trust somebody you don't know. But if you're in a relationship with somebody and you come to know them, it's a lot easier to trust them, right? And I often think, you know, one of the most perhaps quoted Psalms is Psalm 23. It's a beautiful one. You know it, right? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. I mean, it's such beautiful imagery. You know, of walking with God in this beautiful, lush, fragrant pasture. It's a picture of peace and serenity and security and contentment, right? But then what does the next verse say? You ever think about that? It's very different. It seems like it's an abrupt transition. So the following verse says this. It says, though I walk through the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and staff, they comfort me. You know, how in the world do you go from green pastures, right, to the valley of death, walking in the shadow of, you know, walking in the valley of the shadow of death? But life is like that. And I think about it all the time. I said to my wife last night, I said, hey, God gave us another day, you know, and thank God for what we have. And sometimes life can present to you very unexpected circumstances. And maybe right now you're going through tragedy. Maybe you're going through a very difficult trial right now. God will take you from one place to another. And you can do it in an instant. Father Rocky, our chief executive officer, he was on the air with me about a week ago. And he said something that actually struck me. I was mentioning this during the pleasure. He says, God can change things in an instant. And I thought about that. I said, you're right. I mean, I think of how often things have gone from being so great to unexpectedly tragic. You know, you wake up one day and life is radically different for you. Maybe you're going through that right now. But on the other end of the spectrum, the same thing happens. You might know how you're going to get out of your debt. All right? You might be given a bad medical prognosis. And what happens? In an instant, that can change. You know, I heard a guy with his last dollar. I probably wouldn't do this with my last dollar, but he takes his last dollar and he buys a lottery ticket, becomes a millionaire, right? I've known people who were out of money, drowning in debt, but God sent somebody to their life who eradicated their debt, who provided for them in ways that were miraculous. In an instant, their fortunes changed. Same thing with health. People giving a death sentence, miraculously cured. God is still there. Even when you walk through that valley, that shadow, you know, walk through the valley of shadow of death. You know, when you look at God, you have no fear. And that's my word to you today. And I really want you not to fear. And I say it a lot because God will bring you peace. You know, he wants to bring you comfort. That's what he wants to do. And we'll all walk through this valley of the shadow of death. You know, you're going to have dark times, you know, but you don't have to live in that valley. Remember this today, okay? You are just passing through it. Sometimes when circumstances are so overwhelming, you begin to feel stuck, right? You feel limited. I've been there. I know what it's like where you do not see a way out, where you never think you're going to find the freedom or the new beginning or a change in your circumstances. Maybe you feel that way today. But I want to say this to you, and I was praying about this on the way in to the studio today. Let that truth sink down into your heart. You are not stuck in the valley of death. You are not. You know, and I believe God's with you. I believe he's leading you to a place of safety. He's leading you to a place of rest, that there are bigger and better things in store for you. Ask him. Ask him to show you his love in a fresh and new way. We're going to pray the chaplain in just a couple minutes. Ask for that today, especially if you're saying, I can't even pray. Just ask, Lord, show me your love in a fresh new way. You know, picture that, all right? And trust in him. Trust in him. You know, I among the trials that people go through, so often they rob you of your joy. They really do. They can rob you of the joy. Everything on earth gets dim, doesn't it? You might be going through an illness. You might be going through, as I said, that financial problem. When you're faithful to God, you build up resistance. You build up spiritual muscle that hones you, that expands those spiritual biceps, that keeps you fit for God. Trials of life are not bad. They're actually a good thing for your soul. You know, they continue right to the end, as St. Paul, right, says, we fight the good fight. We never fail to strive in strive to love. Speaking of St. Paul, you know, Paul had a thorn in his side that would not go away. I don't know if you know that. And he discerned it as having been allowed to keep him humble. If you go to 2 Corinthians 12, I think it's verse 7, you'll find that. He says that there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me. And he said to me, this is what the Lord told him, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Maybe you're going through that right now. Maybe there's thorns in your life. And maybe the Lord is working in you. Maybe the Lord's going to work through you. Maybe he's training you to love at a higher level, to love even those who bring with them, you know, these, you know, intransient aggravations, these insults, these tensions. Because when you can offer love as your first reaction, as your greatest reaction to that person in your life that's unrelenting, you know, you achieve a higher level of sanctity. I'm telling you, you gain purity. Purity comes, you know, with that comes the opportunity for you know, a higher heaven, if you will. Let's pray for it right now. I've got to take a short break here. As I say, just hang in there. I know how difficult things are. I know how hard it can be. But the Lord is there for you. Trust me, He can change things in an instant. And if He wants you to endure just a little bit longer, thank Him for that. All right? If you want to get in, there's just, I think, two lines open right now. Phones fill up pretty quick for the chapel. But if you're new and you've never called and you have a really important prayer intention, here's the number for you. You can put it in your speed dial. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. That's good for the chaplain. I love praying for you. You know that. Do me a favor, too. As God answers your prayers, as you see His presence, as He reveals Himself in a fresh, new way, email me. I'd love to hear those miracles, those stories from you. It's drew@relevantradio.com. Just in the byline, put answered prayer. Of course, you can always send me your petitions, too. But we'll pray together when I return.